We'll hear next the argument in Jones against Cross. Ms. Day.
Good morning, Your Honor, Counsel. On behalf of, I'm here today on behalf of Torrence Jones, an inmate in the federal prison system, who raises multiple issues regarding due process violations in his inmate hearing regarding events that occurred in Miami, Florida in 2006. Initially, Mr. Jones raises the issue that he received untimely service regarding the hearing, the charges against him, and an untimely hearing. The CFR provides for notice ordinarily within 24 hours, and it is actually unclear when he got his notice because the administrative detention order is actually dated 2 days before the incident in this case. So it's clear he didn't get predated notice, but he did get the incident report itself on September 13th. So we know that that is the only firm date we have for him to have received the notice of the actual charges against him. So a delay of approximately 2 weeks, which is not justified, and he should be given have been given something more.
So I don't understand what that has to do with the due process clause. The Supreme Court said in Wolf against McDonnell that the notice has to be 24 hours at least before the hearing. Wolf doesn't say the hearing has to be held within a week or 2 weeks or any other time. There's a minimum amount of notice, but no maximum amount in Wolf. So what's the problem?
I agree, Your Honor, that there is a minimum amount of notice and that the CFR itself is phrased in terms of ordinarily.
The Code of Federal Regulations is just the Code of Federal Regulations. It's not the Due Process Clause. We're limited to the Constitution here. So the question I have to ask is where does a maximum time rule come from? It's not from Wolf.
No, I agree. And I think
Are you asking us to supplement Wolf? The reason I put it that way is because 2 years after Wolf, after a court of appeals had done that, had said the Due Process Clause requires things that aren't in Wolf, the Supreme Court unanimously reversed and said, no, it doesn't. And indeed, courts of appeals lack authority to add to the list in Wolf. And it looks to me like you're asking us to add to the list in Wolf. And we run head-on into Baxter against Palmigiano if we do anything like that.
I don't believe I'm asking you for an absolute extension of Wolf and the dates and deadlines or the lack thereof in assuring due process. But and I recognize that inmates have a more limited right to due process than, for instance, a defendant in an original criminal case has as well. But I do think that you have to look at the circumstances surrounding the situation to see if the Wolf requirements have sufficiently been met. And I don't believe that that was the situation in this particular case.
Do you know what Baxter against Palmigiano involved?
Your Honor, I have to admit.
Baxter involved this very problem. What had happened in Baxter was that the Ninth Circuit held that the prison disciplinary officials must wait until the criminal prosecutor has decided whether to bring charges. Right? The Constitution obliges them to wait. Baxter, in reversing, said the prison disciplinary officials can choose whether to wait or not. You're arguing that no, just like what the Ninth Circuit held in Baxter, they can't choose, but you're arguing that the Due Process Clause requires just the opposite
right.
of what the Ninth Circuit held.
The flip side.
But it does seem
point.
To me that the Supreme Court has said they can choose. The Due Process Clause does not govern that question.
And, Your Honor, I understand your position regarding that. I agree that we...
The holding of Baxter, right? Maybe Baxter was wrong, but given that it's been decided and it's a decision by the Supreme Court, seems to me an argument that the Due Process Clause gives the prison officials no choice in matters of this kind is very difficult to sustain.
And Again, Your Honor, I don't believe in this particular instance we are talking about those absolutes. I am not saying that there is an absolute requirement, as they did in the Ninth Circuit. And even on the flip side of that.
Constitution for the prison officials to wait. And that does seem to me that it would be a constitutional rule that is supplemental to the list in Wolfe, because this rule cannot be found in Wolfe. And the holding of Baxter is that courts of appeals cannot add to the list in Wolfe.
And Your Honor, I wholeheartedly understand your position regarding that. And your belief that I'm asking for an extension of Wolfe, I didn't view it in those terms. We also have, in combination with that, however, several different or additional violations of due process, including those related to the evidence that was presented in this particular case. My client was prohibited from viewing the video in this particular incident and was limited to his counselor's or representative's review, as well as a review of another officer who had been present with the, I believe, the UDC hearing previously.
I have the same question. Does Wolfe say, I mean, take the hearing officer's failure to look at the video. Hearing officer relied on hearsay about what was in the video. Is there anything in Wolfe that says hearsay is inadmissible in prison disciplinary proceedings?
No, Your Honor, but I think we're also talking about two different things. They also denied my client the right to review that video, which is an aid in preparation of his defense and in dealing with his staff representative. And the government has relied on basically a blanket policy saying that there are inmate security concerns that prevent him from reviewing that video.
This circuit has had about three of those cases, and the prisoners have lost them all.
But
you may be asking us to overrule them.
Well, this circuit has said, though, that in the Piggy case, that there is no blanket policy. And that's basically what the government is doing, is saying there is a blanket policy. We can always say there is a concern for safety at the institution, and inmates should never be given the opportunity to review a video, because there will in every case be this issue of, could they tell another inmate where this is mounted?
And why isn't that a perfectly good statement? They don't want the inmates to know where the cameras are or what their capabilities are. And that sounds like a perfectly sensible thing for a prison to be saying. And you can't say we're different. They just don't want any inmate to know where they are or what their capabilities are.
That initially, that is a blanket policy, which this court has said will not be upheld. And second, because
we said that policy will not be sustained.
In the Piggy case, this
point,
court
where can you find that in Wolfe? Decision that we can't add to.
In the Piggy case, in this instance, this court said that there is no approval of a blanket policy regarding the inmates not viewing the videos. So this circuit has clearly addressed that, did not see that as an extension of Wolfe.
If case A says we do not approve policy X, does not mean we disapprove policy X.
And
it just means that issue wasn't involved in case A. Now, this is perfectly straightforward matter of how to read a case.
Well, Your Honor, and in this particular case, what they are doing is a blanket policy, and they have not given any specific reasons why in this particular case there is a security concern. Moving beyond that is the issue of the documentary evidence, which was not provided to my client for review. He was not provided with the incident report, the reports of the officers that reviewed the video, which would have been presented to the officer. He was not provided with the report of the interview of his witness. He was not provided with his medical reports. He was not provided with photos of his injuries. He had no ability to assist his counselor or his representative in preparing his defense in this particular instance. He had a right. The Chavez case extends the Brady right to these particular types of hearings, so he had the right to that. He also had an inability to call witnesses, which is an extension of my argument regarding the hearing, because of both the continuances that made witnesses unavailable in this particular case. And, clearly witnesses were were not available. In fact, I think it was determined that one of the witnesses had been completely released from the facility before the time of the hearing. So he had those issues as well. Beyond that, Your Honor, I think when you look at the cumulative effect of all of these violations to his due process rights, we have argued that the Bureau of Prisons finding is arbitrary regarding those due process violations, and I believe that it is. And we move beyond that to the district court's determination. We had a hearing before the magistrate judge. At that point in time, the record was more fully developed. We then had a report and recommendation which had some clear errors in it in context of the information that was presented. For instance, the question of whether or not this videotape was ever viewed, which is a central argument in his case, and that was just incorrectly listed within that report, and there's no indication there as to whether there was an understanding. The district court said it was a typo, but there's nothing indicating that that was a typographical error in that report.
Stay. He was, as I recall, actually convicted by this board of having pushed the officer. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the disciplinary officer refused to look at what happened afterwards, so that was whether he defended himself or what have you, that was not germane to the issue of his having initially pushed the officer. Of all of the information that you have listed, what in that information was relevant and probative to whether or not he pushed the officer and not covered by information that was before the hearing officer? In other words, that was non-cumulative.
Your Honor, there were two specific reports that were presented to the hearing officer from individuals who had reviewed the videotape, one which would essentially be what we would think of as a government witness and one the defense witness. They had a distinct difference in those in that they explained this difference in the activity, what happened during the course of this and the reaction of the inmate, of my client, following having been slammed up against the wall and the officer's arm put against his neck. That was critical to the decision that this particular hearing officer needed to make. Reviewing that video could have made a huge difference.
On the issue of the initial pushing?
On both, because as you read the report, it refers to there being, those reports, you can read those, there being no volatile activity up until that point in time. There's no volume, but you see that he's not acting out before that time and that he does not act out immediately after that time. And so it is important, both leading up to and going from, in terms of whether there is a direct defense of intent and then this whole issue of self-defense afterwards that there is. So it was critical for her to have reviewed this just to get to the actual elements of whether or not
In other words, your position is that he's contesting that he actually pushed the officer initially?
Not that he pushed, but there is a difference between pushing somebody and committing an assault. So, and he raised that from the very first appeal in this particular instance, and it's addressed throughout to our final rebuttal in here. There is a case, I believe it's the Scruggs case, which deals with the self-defense issue on this and makes that argument a very difficult argument for the petitioner in this particular case, but that doesn't address that initial issue regarding whether whether he had that necessary intent to commit the assault, which is important to this. If Your Honors have no further questions, I will reserve my remaining time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Day. Mr. Wyatt.
May it please the Court, Assistant U.S. Attorney Nathan Wyatt for the respondent. The key fact in this case is that Jones is charged with two things: failure to obey an order and assaulting another person. And it has been undisputed at every level of the process that Jones did those things. In fact, it is undisputed that he admitted doing both of those things at his disciplinary hearing. The Court can look at the record at Document 9-3, page 5, where the disciplinary hearing officer recorded a quote from inmate Jones at his hearing in which inmate Jones admitted refusing a lawful order to cuff up and admitted having pushed Officer Loftus. There's two issues in these types of habeas cases. The court is well aware of them. Whether the inmate received a fair hearing within the definition set out by the Supreme Court in Wolf v. McDonald, and whether there is some evidence to support the charge and the sanction. And in answering those questions, this court need look no further than Jones's own admission that I've just pointed out to the court. The only way respondent loses this case, is if the court concludes that Jones had a constitutional right to make a self-defense argument at his disciplinary hearing and then was also unconstitutionally handicapped in some way in his ability to present that defense. That is the gist. That's the essence of the petitioner's argument here, that he was prevented from presenting his self-defense argument. And it is also the fatal flaw in the petitioner's argument, because this court has been very clear in Scruggs v. Jordan and Roe v. DeBruin, both of those cases are cited in the respondent's brief, in holding that in the context of prison disciplinary proceedings, inmates do not have a right to raise self-defense as an absolute defense. And so the court doesn't even need to get to that second question of whether Jones was unconstitutionally handicapped and his ability to raise that defense. If the court does go there, the respondent has briefed that issue at length and in detail. I'm not going to cover that ground here unless the court has questions on it. And unless the court does have questions, I will rest on the brief.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything further, Ms. Day?
Otherwise, I believe everything is well addressed within the brief.
It doesn't look like it. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thanks.
Our next case.